Stock up on some double A's for episode number 9 of the Retro Rewind podcast.
Retro Rewind systems initialized. Mission identified. Batteries not included. 1987. Co-hosts online. Auditory analysis online. All systems nominal.
Welcome, everyone. This is the podcast where we look at movies and video games from 15 or more years ago and let you know whether they're still worth rewatching or replaying today. My name is Francisco Ruiz. I am a designer, a dad, and a dispenser of lame jokes at times. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Paul Powers. How are you doing today, Paul?
I'm doing well. Right now, I'm wondering what's the difference between rewatching and replaying.
Well, you usually don't watch a video game.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I thought you meant like play the movie on whatever.
Yeah, I know what you meant.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. All right. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Are you ready for your question of the week?
Yes.
It is pretty simple. Just wondering, where did you grow up?
Planet Earth. That's what I tell people. That's my stock answer. Because being an Army brat, we moved around every couple of years. So, and that's not just in the U.S. That's Germany. I was born in Italy. Not Italian. I'm American. United Statesian. Sorry for all those other Americans out there, like South Americans and Canadians.
Yes, we are citizens of the United States of America.
Currently, yes.
I have no plans of changing that.
I don't either, but you never know. When the Chinese invade, you know, I don't know if our army can withstand their million-man army.
We're not doing Red Dawn today.
Okay, sorry.
Well, cool. Thank you, citizen of the world, Paul. And today, for our guest host, we have Paul's brother once again.
Hello.
Hello, Josh Powers. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Will you please, in case anyone didn't listen to our episode number 3, which is at retrorewindpodcast.com/RRP3, where Josh was co-hosting with his soon-to-be wife, Sharon.
Unless the Chinese invade. No, I'm joking. No,
wedding's still on in case the Chinese invade. It's just not going to be here. So,
okay.
Why don't you refresh us, Josh? What do you do for a living?
For a living, right now I am a mortgage specialist, but I also make movies on the side, I guess. And
oh, sweet.
Do comedy and stuff. So,
wait, very cool. Like, where can people catch your act?
My act?
Yeah, you just
Comment. I'm helping the guys over at QuipTracks at QuipTracks.com who write, if anyone who's familiar with Riff Tracks or Mystery Science Theater, it's some guys who will do their own riffing.
Very cool.
You can catch that. And I have some work that I've done myself, voice work there. They host Treacher Riffs, me and Jordan, my good buddy there. We do our own kind of riffing, which we haven't done lately. The Quip Tracks guys, they're still in the game. They do a lot. They're very consistent, and I highly recommend them.
Oh. More than your own Treacher Riffs.
Well, you know, I'm biased towards my own. I want people, of course, to see my own.
Yeah. So, getting off topic, and you know who's best to bring us back onto topic is our navigator, Alice. Engage new tube, Alice.
New tube systems engaged.
All right, so this is the segment of the show where we look at or we recommend movies that we've seen recently, because a lot of the time we were talking about old movies, but I'm going to let you know what sort of new, what contemporary movies or games are out that we like. So let's start with Josh. What's new on your tube?
Mine is a combination of new and old. A trailer was just released for DuckTales Remastered.
Woohoo!
Yeah, that's the noise I made when I heard about it. Well, So Capcom is releasing, basically taking the original DuckTales Nintendo game, which is amazing, one of the best ever, and going in and, well, remastering it. Like, the animation is smoother. The controls look like they're the same. It looks like they added new levels and completely redesigned and animated it, and it looks amazing. It's coming out this summer, and it's going to be available on, like, PlayStation, Xbox, Wii U. So it's I'm pretty excited about it. The trailer's out there, and it's just the whole, they're showing you all the different themes or all the different levels and playing the theme song. That's actually really pretty funny how it starts out too, because it starts out with these epic quotes saying, like, these, like, the creator of Psychonauts, you know, saying this is amazing, like, this game is a milestone, whatever. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, Paul actually showed me the trailer for that the other night, and it looked pretty cool. It looked like you were playing a cartoon, which was really cool to see.
Yeah, and like I think it's Transylvania, the level, I was like, I know that. And it's like, the mummies are the same, but they're like, if they're actually on the show, you know, it's so cool.
Very cool. Yeah, and I'll put the link in for that trailer in the show notes, which you'll be able to check out at RRP9. All right.
Is
thank
it
you.
09 or just, sorry, is just it 09
nine.
Or just 9?
Just 9. Nine. Okay. Yeah. Cool, Josh. Thank you for sharing that. Paul, how about you? What's new on your tube?
Well, last night, Valerie and I, with it being Good Friday, we saw The Passion of the Christ.
Mm-hmm.
The Mel Gibson movie, and we saw it with a commentary with Mel Gibson and some theologians. And I usually try to watch it every Good Friday, but sometimes don't get around to it because it conflicts with other Good Friday services and whatnot. But if you're into it and you haven't, if you like the movie and you haven't listened to any of the commentaries, I think there's like three or four.
Oh wow!
At least on the Blu-ray there is. By the time you hear this, I don't know if Red Ray or whatever.
Ultraviolet is what's
next. Yeah, Ultraviolet.
Hopefully wherever that you can access it, we'll also have the commentaries available. Because if you like the movie, I highly recommend listening to at least the one with the Mel Gibson and the theologians.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't quite agree on all their points, but a lot of it I did. And it really opened up the movie and made it more enjoyable for me to watch in the future.
Very cool.
I saw the first 10 minutes and it was really cool because they were talking about how, like, there's a shot of the full moon, and the theologians are like, we actually know for a fact, we can trace it back to where we know for a fact that that Friday there was a full moon, you know? And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Oh, that's cool, that level of detail.
Yeah, so it's like, I really look forward to hearing the rest of it because they seem very insightful on many levels.
But just to clear that up, the reason why they know it's a full moon is because that's when the Passover begins. It's the first full moon of the year. So that's why.
Well, that's,
see, now
just
that,
taking the just using cheat codes.
I told you, yeah. I didn't hear the whole commentary.
Ooh, the strategy guide called The Bible. I think I'll use this.
So anyway, Francisco, what's been new on your tube?
Oh, thanks for asking. Last night, not very Good Friday-esque. Christy and I saw this movie called The Hunter, which was not very Good Friday-esque, is what I was trying to say.
Oh, I was about to say, dang.
But it's a movie with William. I think it's Willem Dafoe, not William Dafoe.
It's Willem.
Willem Dafoe, essentially he plays this hunter that gets a job to go and try to find a Tasmanian tiger down in Tasmania, which for whatever reason I thought was in Africa, but no, it's in Australia. I don't know what's wrong with me.
You obviously never watched the cartoon show Tasmania?
No.
Oh, with the Tasmanian devil. And it's,
oh, well, I think I saw bits of that. I never really liked it. But anyways, The Hunter was a really good movie. It's definitely this, I guess you want to call it a slow burn type of a movie. It's not like heavy action or anything like that, but it's a very good drama, and it's really interesting seeing the sort of character arc that Willem Dafoe's character makes over the course of the movie. Yeah.
When did it come out?
I want to say it just came out last year. So it's not that long ago, but we saw it on Netflix.
Cool.
Yep. Go out and see The Hunter, and stay tuned for the DuckTales video game remastered, and check out The Passion of the Christ with commentary for this Easter season, or you could just wait till next year.
Or whenever.
Or anytime, really.
Well, yeah, that's true. Good point.
Makes a great Christmas morning movie.
Double feature with the Nativity.
Yeah. That's actually... Anyway.
All right, yeah. Well, Alice, let's move on to the meat of our podcast, the Retro Rewind Roundtable.
Alert, alert, target located. Spoilers incoming. Engaging Retro Rewind Reactor.
The residents of 817 East 8th Street are about to lose everything they have.
What do you mean those tenants are still in there?
Tonight. I'll have them out by tonight.
Nothing in this world can save them. Nothing but a miracle. Steven Spielberg presents a Matthew Robbins film.
Welcome to America. Spaceships from a very small planet. Very small. This is history. Machines that reproduce themselves.
I like being a family again.
What the hell is that?
It's them, the little guys.
I don't know how you got here, or why you picked us.
Somebody's helping them. Somebody's bringing them together.
Is that why you're here?
Batteries Not Included, starring Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy.
Alrighty, Josh, can you please read for us the synopsis of the movie, since it may have been a little difficult to hear what it was about from that trailer?
Yes. On IMDb, the storyline here, written by Rob Hartill, goes like this. Group of tenants in an apartment block are being forced to move out so that it can be demolished. The tenants are reluctant to move, so the developers hire a local gang to, quote-unquote, persuade them to leave. Fortunately, visiting alien mechanical life forms come to town. When they befriend the tenants, the aliens use their extraterrestrial abilities to defeat the developers.
No spoiler.
Oh.
The whole idea is, like, I don't know, are they going to be able to move or stay? But it says they defeat the developers.
Well, in a synopsis, DG, that is pretty, pretty much, that is pretty spoilery for a synopsis, yeah.
Okay, do you want to start over then?
No.
No, because we already said a spoiler alert.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Weren't you listening to Alice?
I was, I guess.
Paul, what are some of the technicals of the movie?
All right. Asterix, batteries, space, not space included, came out on December 18th, 1987 in the U.S. It was directed by Matthew Robbins, and... screenplay was done by Brad Bird way back in the 80s.
Yeah,
Brad Bird's a favorite of mine. Anyway, all right, this movie also stars Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy, as well as Frank McRae and Elizabeth Pena and a few others. And was also, for you Mad About You TV fans, it had Ira as the guy who was in the limo.
Paul Reiser's best friend in Mad About You.
Yeah, that was fun to see.
No, I never really watched Mad About You. Is that, are you talking about Kovacs, that guy?
Yeah, it was Kovacs.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry. Okay, because I didn't really see Mad About You, but I did recognize him. So.
Okay. And this was also produced, executive produced by the winning team of Kathleen Kennedy, Frank Marshall, Steven Spielberg. That team also brought you the likes of E.T., Indiana Jones, Goonies, Back to the Future, Tiny Toons. So this has potential of being a really good movie here, folks.
I don't know. That team sounds a little shoddy to me.
All right. They also made like Land Before Time and American Tale, so I don't know.
Oh, well, then I guess they may have a shot.
Okay. And let's see.
How much did it cost to make? And how much?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to find out. I'm sorry.
No worries.
It doesn't say how much it cost to make, but it did say it made about $33 million in the U.S.
Okay.
Total.
1987, that might be pretty good.
It might be. I don't know. I wish they would say how much it made, but oh well. Yeah. I mean, for how much it cost to make.
Yeah. No worries.
Yeah.
Let's move on, though, because we're not all about the technicals of the movies, though that is sometimes fun. Let's start with Josh. What is a vivid memory that you have of Batteries Now Include?
Oh, the robots.
The robots,
absolutely.
Yeah,
totally. The flying little saucer robots. And I was thinking about that, like, you know, rewatching it, and it's like, I think it really stuck out to me as a kid because there's really this Sesame Street Muppet kind of quality to the movie, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's like, and that's what you remember about it?
Well, it's like the old people in it, the humans, it's very much a Sesame Street world. It's like, what do you know about Sesame Street? Well, Muppets. It's like, well, it's actually like a lot of humans living, cohabiting with this Muppet world. And that's kind of how I saw the movie, like as a kid. It's like, oh, it's the movie with the robots. It happens to have humans in it, but I'm there for the robots, you know? Mm-hmm. Just like Sesame Street, you're there for the Muppets. The humans are there to give it, you know, story and reality and whatever, but...
Interesting. Yeah, that's a good parallel.
Yeah, I did not come up with that parallel my own self.
So as a kid, I remember that.
Nice. Paul, did you have, did the robots stick out to you from?
Yeah, I had very few. When we talked about Batteries Not Included, I remember liking it as a kid. I remember it about being a little tiny saucer robot of basically UFOs flying around old people in an apartment building.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one
and
of the
fixed things.
Well, I didn't remember that. What I did.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
No, I remembered that it was one of the few movies that I enjoyed that also made me cry as a kid. E.T. being the other one.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah. So that, but E.T. much more, even more so, but that's all I really remembered about this movie.
Hmm.
And I don't, like, if E.T. had not existed, this movie would not exist, no question.
Interesting.
Well, as far as, like, E.T. was, you know, a lot of the same people were involved in E.T.,
mm-hmm.
and E.T. proved that there was a market for this. I mean, there's a lot of E.T. knockoffs, and this is kind of a, I mean, even though it's 5 years later, that was still in a time where they were basically capitalizing on what was essentially the biggest movie of the decade.
Mm.
So Ira was also in E.T. I didn't realize that.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Was he?
Well, you said a lot of the same people.
I meant like Steven Spielberg, Kathleen Kennedy, and Frank Marshall, and
like behind the scenes people.
Yeah. Oh, like the creators of it, not the stars.
Oh.
But, and the themes about aliens and, you know, here to help people in need and stuff. So.
Yeah.
No, that didn't exist before E.T.
Well, I mean, and also like that whole thing where the robots are in the shed and the, you know, luring Jessica Tandy out there, that's straight E.T.
Yeah.
I disagree. There were aliens before E.T. with Ridley Scott's Alien.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is pure Spielbergian kind of aliens we're talking about.
Oh, Alien came out before E.T.?
By 3 years, yeah.
Mind blown.
Really? Well, no, or are you just being sarcastic?
No, I'm serious.
Oh.
No, you have the adult movie and then you have the kids cash in later. That's what that's about.
Yeah, wow. It's usually the adults first, Paul. because it takes adults to make kids. So
I will say, though, I mean, in Paul's defense, Alien is surprisingly timeless as far as you watch that movie. And it set the tone for like movies were basically trying to catch up to that level of tone, atmosphere, and quality for many, many years, you know. There are 90s movies that look more 80s than Alien. And that came out in 79.
It came out in 79?
It did.
Yeah.
We are digressing quite a bit, though. But you mentioned something, Paul, that made me remember. Let's just stop right now and give what are our predictions of whether or not we would think Barry's Not Included is a classic or second class. So before we even watched it, what were we thinking? Let's go ahead and start with you, Paul.
Well, I enjoyed it as a kid, but the fact that I haven't seen it since I was a kid, I'm going to have to go with, I predict it would be second class.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's what we tend to run into a lot with these older movies. But Josh, how about you?
That's a hard call for me because, when I went into this, I didn't even have to look at IMDb to think this is going to be an IMDb rating of like in the 6.0 something or 6 point something, because it really is. I remember it being this Saturday matinee kind of movie that you would go to. It's not like a action blockbuster movie from summer movie that you would go see. It's just this really small sci-fi, homespun sci-fi movie, you know, kind of this. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really expect greatness, but niceness. So okay. I can't say it's second class for being for delivering on what it is. But, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm not going to recommend it to everybody. It's like, oh, that's so good. You have to see this. So maybe I would recommend it. So maybe I would say it's second class.
So is that your prediction or did you just give us your rating?
No, that was my prediction.
Oh, okay.
It's like, it's not setting out to be an A-plus movie.
Gotcha, okay.
So I don't know.
Just the way you phrased it, it sounded like you're just going right up. Here's my review. No discussion necessary.
Sorry, right. I'm like in discussion mode, so I'm primed.
For me, I felt like I was pretty much in Paul's boat, though. I think I was leaning a little more toward second class just because it had been so long since I'd watched it. And my memories of watching it, I think I liked the robots, but other than that, I remembered, similar to some of the other movies we've talked about, being bored by the movie. So I wasn't really all that jazzed about rewatching it again, but that's what I do for you, the listeners. I watch movies that I'm not that excited about so that you know whether to watch them or not. But did those predictions pan out? Let's discuss. Going back to you, Paul, we're talking about the robots in general and how you thought that you said the robots were one of your favorite parts. Am I remembering that right?
The memorable parts. I didn't have a favorite part. Nothing really stood out to me as a favorite part.
Okay.
Just these vague memories.
Okay. Oh yeah. Because
I guess that would be more my favorite part.
Oh, rather than a vivid memory?
Or
it could be both, I guess.
Okay.
Well, for me, I have a couple vivid memories. And the first one is very similar to you guys, the robots, but more specifically, I remember the robots having babies and the little babies actually coming out of the mothership. I was like, I thought that was a cool idea. And I don't think I made the connection at the time that you have a mothership is typically what you call like a spaceship.
I didn't make that connection either.
Yeah. I didn't when I was younger, but I did rewatching it. I thought that was fun. And then my other vivid memory was the Harry, who was this former boxer character. I remembered him crying when the baby robot died from the axe swing that the arsonist did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, except that wasn't in the movie.
Wait, he didn't cry?
No, I don't think he did.
I thought he cried in the movie.
Do I need to play this for you, Paul?
Yeah. Incepted that into my brain?
Exactly. That's what happened to me. Someone incepted that into my brain. Because essentially what actually happened was the axe swing was by Carlos, who was not really the arsonist, and he did it to the dad robot, not one of the baby robots.
I thought you meant he didn't cry at all.
He cried when I think the baby robot died as a stillborn baby robot, but not when the dad robot got killed by the axe swing. So I was completely crossing my memory wires.
You were incepted.
I was incepted, yes. Someone on that flight to Japan all those years ago said, Francisco, we need to give you a different memory just for fun.
So do you remember what other movies that actor has been in?
Which one?
The Frank McRae. The tall black guy.
No, I don't.
Does he look familiar?
I know
vaguely,
one.
I guess.
Okay, which one?
For me?
Yeah.
Loaded Weapon 1.
Yes. He plays the captain.
Yeah, the yelling captain. He plays a... Now, I think he's usually typecast one way or the other. And
he also plays the yelling guy in Last Action Hero, cop guy.
Loaded Weapon 1. Is that like a Mel Brooks take on Lethal Weapon?
Yes.
Yes, with Emilio Estevez.
Samuel L. Jackson.
If I ever saw that, and I thought I've seen most of Mel Brooks' movies.
Oh, it's not Mel Brooks. It's a Mel Brooks-style parody.
Oh, right. Oh.
Right, it was more like Hot Shots, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
But he was also in The Wizard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
He was a trucker.
Wow.
Yeah, he was the trucker. All right.
I didn't expect to fall down the rabbit hole of Harry's other.
That ties into some of my memory. My most vivid memory, I do remember him being a mute, and I remember him only having one line, being the title of the movie.
Oh yeah.
But I was incepted as well, I guess, because he has more than one line.
Oh, well, they were all TV commercial lines, so.
Brain.
It's only halfway. I don't know if I would count that as a
All sort. Right. I retract that. But... Whoop.
What?
All right.
And I have another very vivid memory, actually.
Yeah, go for it, Josh.
Yeah, I remember... what's his name? Carlos, the guy who's trying to get him out of the building.
Yeah.
Totally destroying the restaurant. And I remember just trying to get him out and just like being a total, basically terrorizing all the old people. And I remember as a kid how violent and senseless it was.
Yeah.
And it just like was, for me as a kid, it just offset the tone of the whole movie. It's like, yeah, it's a really nice movie, but there's this really violent beginning.
Yeah, I thought they went too much rewatching it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was surprised. I had completely forgotten about that part of it.
And actually, rewatching it, I was like, I guess we'll get to that later, but it wasn't as offset because it kind of picks up again towards the end, so it's not completely off balance by the beginning, kind of bookended in a way.
Hmm. Yeah, good point. All right, so any other vivid memories from anyone? I didn't have any others, but I don't think Paul had any others. Josh?
No, I didn't have any vivid memories.
All right. Let's move on to our favorite memories about the movie then. And I'd sort of tying in with the whole robot one, I'll go ahead and kick us off. I remember the robot effects, and we talked about this a little earlier as well, being really cool. Just thinking, I wasn't sure if, like, remembering if they had done the robot animations with, like, stop motion or if they were live puppets or what, but especially when they're flying around, I mean. But the way they did it, I thought was really cool, and I almost wondered if maybe you guys would have some better insight into this. Did they use the same sort of kind of like a blue screen, sort of like how Star Wars did it? You know, how the camera would be the thing moving, not actually the ships? And so I wonder if they did it in that sort of style, because I don't know how they would get it otherwise, the types of shots they did.
I do, like, rewatching it for sure. I remember it being all, like, basically, like, using Star Wars or Close Encounters kind of technology, where they film it here and then reprint it over on the 35mm, so it has it. That's why I think the special effects still really... hold up at that. It's also super expensive to do that way.
Oh, sure.
But And I thought, like, oh, okay. But what I was really surprised by was how much of a mix they used to get the robots to look real. Because there's definitely that going on, but there's definitely practical effects, you know, where I, it looked like could have been just string going on. There's a point where a trash can is going upstairs that you could tell, well, they probably just reversed the film.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I think they used a real eclectic bag of tricks to make them kind of come to life.
Totally.
And I think that speaks volumes to heavy reliance on CG nowadays, where it would be like, doesn't matter, CG kind of thing. It's like, this is a true, like, you know, there's what Carlos is holding onto a baseball bat and you don't see the other end. And it's just might as well be some guy holding the other end and he's fighting against, you know, that's like total, you know, these are tricks that go back to the invention of film, you know?
Yeah.
And that was really great to see. I just remember it being just all, you know, Star Wars style special effects. But
so were the effects some of your favorite memories, Josh, or did you have other favorite memories?
Oh yeah. I like the effects as much as I like how Muppets come to life, you know, it's the same kind of thing. It's not like I enjoy watching puppets. It's like, no, I enjoy the whole idea of a, you know, the character.
Yeah, so. Totally.
Yeah.
Cool. How about you, Paul? What was one of your favorite memories from before you rewatched it?
I just had vague memories.
Oh, okay.
So
I thought that only applied to the vivid ones.
What part did you cry at?
Oh, yeah. Actually, let's bring that up.
Well, it was, I didn't remember what part I cried at, but rewatching it was when the father got hacked and chopped.
Yeah, totally. That was like, it was sad because it was almost like he wasn't expecting to be hurt. Like,
yeah.
Oh, hello, other person. What is that thing you have?
Or after the stillborn baby?
Is after. I think the stillborn baby was back, like Harry had brought him back to life too. By
yeah.
That point.
Can we talk about how morbid the title of the movie is?
Yeah, that asterisk. What's the deal with that?
No, I'm talking about.
I'm kidding.
I'm talking about the title refers to a stillborn sentient robot.
Batteries. Is that how you think of all the toys on the shelves that don't have batteries? You think they're all stillborn?
There's a stillborn robot in this movie, and it comes to a screeching halt. Like, it's like, oh my gosh, this is terrible, sad. And then he says, that's like, here it is, the title of the movie. This is what it's about. It's about a stillborn robot.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure why they, honestly, I'm not sure why they decided to title this that. It doesn't seem like the best title for this movie, but what were you going to say, Josh?
I thought about it too, and I thought like maybe it's like, it's kind of a neat idea. It's like, what are these robots? What are these aliens? Well, I guess their batteries aren't included. They need help or something, you know, some sort of poetic thing. But the movie, So it's like they're clearly in the movie. It's like the moment that it draws the most attention to is that moment. It's like, really? That is okay.
I thought that it was just the robots don't come with batteries.
Right. That's what I was trying to say.
But you know what? Now, I mean, this is really getting to the weeds of it. But how? Okay. So they come to Earth or this hotel to draw power from the outlets, correct? I'm remembering that correctly?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what I thought. I have this vivid memory of the prongs going in. Anyways. Okay. So what are they charging up? At least in Earth technology, you need a battery to store that power that you are drawing from. Otherwise, it's just sort of, they would need to stay connected in order to to continue to function. So they do have a battery inside.
But not as we know it.
Right. It's alien technology.
And it depends on how you define battery if you want to get into the semantics of it all.
Yeah, I guess they technically don't have an Earth battery included in them. That's a good point.
That's why you introed this whole podcast and have people store up on their double A's.
Exactly. In case the aliens come. Yeah, I guess. Good point. But that's all very much beside the point. But going back to Josh's point of this being sort of, that being sort of a morbid title, I actually didn't really take that away. In fact, I wasn't all that upset when the sort of baby robot was born without any life. And I'm not really sure why. Maybe it was partly because I knew it was going to come back to life later, having seen the movie, or just
morbid.
Well, I guess it's because I don't remember that part happening at all.
Oh, okay. That might be, yeah.
So it was more of a surprise for me.
Ah, yeah.
Do you think it would have bothered you more, Francisco, if you knew that he was going to come back to life?
You mean if I didn't know that?
Yeah.
You know what? I almost want to say no, and that kind of surprises me as a new dad. I'm sure if that had happened to me, I would have been really, really upset by it. But
you're also not emotionally connected to these special effects flying around the movie.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say I had no sort of time for attachment with that little baby robot. Nor did I feel all that attached to the parents. I mean, I thought they were just cool robots.
Okay. But because I did as a kid, by the time you're at that point in the movie, you've gotten to know the father the best. He's been there the longest. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then for him to be, chopped away.
Well, and my own personal experience or my own personal expectations rewatching it, it's like, oh, well, it's dead. And here's the part where they bring it back to life. It's actually a hard cut to them burying it.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, they're really. And they spend time mourning over it. There's no attempt to which really kind of a plot hole. Why doesn't Harry take that moment to fix it? But
that's when he took it right after they buried it.
Why didn't he just? Because waiting for them to bury it.
Yeah,
I guess.
Exactly.
Well, he was waiting for them to turn around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's that. I didn't expect that. I was like, like in 101 Dalmatians, where that pup,
it's
like
right
the 15th
away.
Puppy. Yeah, it's dead, and it's like, oh, but they bring him back to life in the next, minute or two.
Well, they have to. Where machines, you don't. You can wait a couple days.
Right. I guess I was just expecting that. Like I said, that's why. Caught me off guard.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Anyway.
It's interesting that we all were affected by it differently. But going back to favorite memories, I'm assuming that wasn't one of yours, Josh. Did you have any others?
Favorite memories of the movie? Like
yeah,
I said,
how about give us one more favorite memory?
One more favorite memory. I guess Harry. I guess I kind of already talked about it, but I liked his character. He seemed like big, sweet guy. Mm-hmm. Really. So
did you notice that? Speaking of Harry, it seemed like I certainly didn't have this connection as a kid because this other movie I'm about to mention wasn't around, but he reminded me of Bumblebee from the latest Transformers movies.
Really?
He kept talking, I don't know if you noticed, but he would only talk in sort of like ad sound bites.
Oh, yeah,
Barry's not included, or I forget the other phrases he said, but...
He said, we bring good things to life. I'll take door number one. Never leave home without it.
Exactly. So, and just because Bumblebee in Michael Bay's movies only can speak through essentially ad sound clips from the radio, it just, I made that connection in my head. That was funny.
I think that's a point against, I don't know. That's a good contrast to me because it's like you see this human emotional condition, this guy who can't relate to other people except because he watches like TV all the time. Whereas in Transformers, I guess it's like, I guess he's forced into it electronically. So as it's like the same thing, but very different takes, even though they're doing the exact same thing.
Hmm. Does that make any sense? About
yes and no.
Exactly. It does make some sense, but I'm not sure if it makes full sense.
Okay. It just seems like they're essentially like the same character trait, but because one's human, I think that gives it more weight.
Yeah, and more relatability.
More relatable to me, anyway.
Gotcha.
Well, it's like the other one is more of a like, well, it's that way. He can't speak. He can only speak that way because, there's no reason other than we wrote it into the script and there's a glitch or something.
Let's move on. How about memories that we wish we could forget. I'm assuming, Paul, you don't have any of these because you don't really remember the movie that well.
Oh, I thought it was just anything, even from rewatching it.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Actually, give us one from you rewatching it.
I just thought the guy tearing up the place was a little bit too mean.
Carlos?
Yeah.
Yes, that was very mean, but I guess if he is really trying to get out of the slum he was in and do a job with...
Yeah, you look at it when you're watching the movie, you're like, wow, this is really extreme.
Mm-hmm. Like, but do you know the reason it's written that way is to so that you sympathize with the people in the building more. The more they're terrorized, the more you sympathize with them.
And no, because it's so extreme, you're like... you get to the point where he's like... you know, I want these guys are vandalizing. It was like, well, what's the cop is like, well, what's the point? They'll just come up with, you know, they won't be able to stay because they'll come up with other people who saw them elsewhere and other things like, and I'd be like, fine. But in the meantime, they could be at the police station held under captivity for a few days and they're not tearing up the place.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know. They went to such an extreme. I know this kind of thing does happen in real life, but not to that kind of level, I hope.
Yeah, you know I'd hope so, too. I don't know, though.
But I'd like to forget any of that kind of stuff happens.
All right. No, that's totally fair. How about you, Josh? Did you have a memory or after rewatching something that you wish you could forget?
Yes. The part where both Carlos and the painter guy they go into the shed.
Mason,
yes. Yeah. They go in the shed and their hair is like frizzed out. And
yeah, just
that whole moment is like, it's been a realistic, not realistic, but like, you know, there's a tone of realism to it. And all of a sudden it becomes just for about 10 to 15 seconds, a cartoon.
No.
I kind of like that actually. The hair frizz.
But I understand what you mean
Just shifted pretty strongly, I guess.
There are points in some movies that are like, oh, for me, it's in the movie Up when the dogs start flying airplanes and have Chewy toys as controllers. There are points in the movie where it's like, okay, this is made for babies or children. You know, they've gone too far.
They jumped the shark, so to speak.
Yeah. They've jumped the shark, but jump the shark is a different kind of analogy, but it's close.
They've nuked the fridge.
But no, it's like because... Yeah, go on.
Anyway, this movie has it. I don't believe it's there. I believe it's when the cheese is on the little baby alien and he's in a burger walking around. I'm like, okay, this is made for children. You know?
That's the part you'd like to forget.
Yeah, this is the part where me as an adult checks out and like, okay... This is not made for me.
That's how I felt. Like Carlos was all his clothes tattered, running away. It's total slapstick comedy, you know.
But I actually would agree with Francisco. I enjoyed that part.
Yeah. Though I would disagree with you, Paul, in the case of actually one of my favorite memories was the robots helping them all cook.
Okay.
Yeah. I skipped over it because I wanted us to continue. But yeah, since you brought it up. That was one of my
favorite there you movies. Go. To each his own.
Exactly.
And that's why Up made a lot of money.
I really enjoyed Up. I really like that.
There you go.
I know a lot of people don't, though.
Yeah. Really? I've only talked to a few. Everyone else loves it.
Oh.
Anyway.
We can all agree that the first 15 minutes is magical.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes.
But anyway, we're talking about this.
Anyway, back to Batteries Not Included. Something that I wish I could forget, and I had this memory from before I rewatched it and after, it's still the same. The painting of Marissa pregnant naked. I mean, she's not completely exposed.
I don't remember seeing that as a kid. When I saw it now, I was like, did I watch it on the Disney Channel?
Yeah,
it was
maybe.
Edited out, you know?
Oh, that's very possible.
Yeah.
Because I would have remembered that, I thought.
Yeah. I'd remembered it from before and thinking that that was really awkward. And
especially for a kid's movie. When you know it's a kid's movie, when they have a guy, a walking cheeseburger.
and, yeah, but this, and is a, This is an 80s kids movie, so you had stuff in there that was straight for adults like that.
Yeah.
Something that after rewatching it that I had forgotten that bothered me, but bothered me after rewatching it was, I think Jessica Tandy's a fine actress, but in this role, I was just more annoyed by her than anything with her.
Oh, oh yes.
Totally I'm not sure if she has had Alzheimer's or senility or what, but it was just like, seriously, this is really, stop it.
She played it very like, she's a very good actress, and it seemed like she was like, you know, characteristically, you know, goofy and not, there's like no, just like, I'm like she's acting like she's going crazy, not like she actually is. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly.
Oh, I disagree. I thought she was, I wouldn't say she was delightful, but I think she had delightful moments. I thought she was an interesting character. At first, I was like, oh no. But after about 10, 15 minutes, I thought she was fine. But that's me.
No, that is fine. Everything's fine.
Her husband, Frank, though, the way he treated her grounded her character more for me than her performance.
Yeah, that's a good point. It did seem very real the way he responded to her.
Which, you know, if she were on the same level as grounding that character, I think that would have been really good. And like I said, I think Jessica Tandy is definitely capable of that, but I guess that's the director's decision to have her a little loopier than, you know, cartoonishly loopier, I guess.
Maybe they forgot to include her batteries.
You have a wah-wah sound effect to play?
I do not, unfortunately.
Okay.
Because I would be playing that all the time with my lame jokes. All right. What other sort of, any other random memories as we close out the round table that you guys wanted to bring up? None.
I'll pass.
What?
I said I'll pass.
You'll pass. Okay.
Everything I have to say left is just based on rewatching, I guess.
Okay.
Just talking about kind of the era that the movie was in.
Okay. Well, let's talk about. Let's see here.
Speaking of era, did you notice that all the photos at the beginning of the what is it, the credits, the montage at the beginning, they were like, some of the photos were done, but
it was his head put in and there.
Okay.
It's because because everybody has Photoshop now, you know, it's like we're all a little bit more trained to see that.
Yeah.
That's funny though.
Maybe we were just kids and didn't know better.
Well, yeah, both end. Well, you're talking about, we can get into sort of the what'd you say, Josh, the time frame of the movie or
the era?
The era. Yeah. And let me leave. Yeah. One thing that I had remembered was the, Mason's really long hair that being an 80s thing. So
let me
kick it off to you with that.
We'll talk about hair.
Yes. Era. Different styles, colors.
We could talk about the Hera.
Oh,
see, I got lame jokes too. Well, something that struck me about like the movies. What?
Oh my God. I said, ow, it struck.
Struck you too.
Yes.
I think what's really fascinating is that this movie, like this is a movie in the 80s. There's these movies that are based on old people that could open a movie. Like Jessica Tandy and Don Ameche. You know, these are names that you could, you know, center a whole story around.
Who's
just on
Don
based
Ameche?
On.
Yeah, I don't know that name either.
Don Ameche, he is the old guy in Cocoon, the main old guy.
Oh, okay.
He's also in Trading Places, the guy who sets up the bet. He's in a lot of movies. But I was just kind of thinking about it. It's like you have on Golden Pond in 81, you have Cocoon in 85, Batteries Not Included in 87, Driving Miss Daisy in 89. This is like a very distinct kind of old people, sweet old people movies, you know, that people would enjoy going out to see. That, and I can't think of somebody like there's no equivalent to that now, you know.
Marigold's Hotel.
Starring who?
It has you just had to ask me when I wasn't ready.
Okay.
Well, while you're getting ready, Paul, I want to respond.
Okay.
I actually just the movies with older people in them were certainly movies that were not for me. I never saw Cocoon and the other movie you mentioned. I can only think of this movie as one that with sort of the older cast, or the leads is an older actor and actress, because I don't know, maybe I just prefer leads that are either just not older. I am not sure what to say adults are, because they are adults when you're older, but
the geriatric.
There you go. But these are like, you know, kind of kids movies or family movies anyway. Mm-hmm. You don't see really old family movies with old people who the old people aren't played for laughs, in a sense.
Yeah.
These are like the actual main characters these are our characters kind of thing, you know?
And well, I'm just saying that I don't really care for that. I don't know what it is about it. I'm just like, that's not the movie I'm first in line to go see.
Yeah, I'm just saying I can't think of any equivalent now I think that's kind of a unique thing from the 80s, possibly.
Yeah, I think it certainly is of that time.
All right. The Best of the Marigold Hotel came out in 2011, stars Judy Dench and Tom Wilkinson and Bill Nighy and Maggie Smith. It's about a bunch of old people going and retiring to a hotel in India. There are films like that.
Mm-hmm.
But like you... And they
and
do.
I what, continue not to watch them.
Right, but I mean, they are, and they are critically praised, you know. So yeah. I did love these geriatric movies.
I did love The King's Speech, but again, that, I guess that's not really a geriatric
movie. But I think
movie.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, these aren't really family films, like, you know.
Okay. Well, it's more of adult nature now is what movies like to
right.
board. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And well, should we...
Go ahead.
Should we talk about Spielberg now?
No, he's talked about it enough. Let's move on.
All I do is walk up and down Hollywood Boulevard, and all I hear is Spielberg this, Spielberg that.
No.
Because...
Let's go ahead and here's what we'll do. We'll talk about Spielberg and his influence on the movie and even movies of this era, and then I'd like to close out our roundtable with talking about... sort of the at least the themes I noticed in the movie of brokenness and restoration. So let's start with Spielbergian. Go.
Okay. Well, it's just the and this does relate into my memory. It's like I remember his influence, like his name was on it, but I didn't remember like how involved. Like he didn't direct it, he didn't produce it.
Mm-hmm.
So or yeah, I think he
executive produced.
Yeah.
He
so
might
it's
have
like
yeah.
You know, so it's like how much of this, and I don't have any distinct memories that would like make it stand out that way, but rewatching it, I'm like, I've seen, you know, a lot more, so I can pick up more. So the whole thing reminded me a lot of his segment in the Twilight Zone movie called Kick the Can, which is about a bunch of old people who become younger by playing the game Kick the Can. It's just basically Spielberg just like, you know, dealing with an older, you know, a lead of geriatrics, basically.
Just
and then I found out that it's actually the story originally was supposed to be a episode of Spielberg's series Amazing Stories, and he liked it so much that he turned it into a movie. So that made a lot more sense there. So it's like it is kind of an Amazing Stories. It is a kind of a half hour story stretched into 90 minutes.
It is.
And that was actually an hour into the movie. I felt that too. It's like it has this major slag, in my opinion, where it's like, wow, you know, not like there's a good portion here that doesn't sit, you know, because the story is being stretched out.
Mm.
Other Spielbergian things. There's a line that says, "Oh, like Frankie says to Mason, who are you?" It's like, "I live in 3C or whatever." He's like, "Oh, you're in Moskowitz's old place." Moskowitz
is it Moskowitz from American Tail?
It's American Tail, the Mouskowitz. Also happens to be Spielberg's assistant's name, last name.
Moskowitz.
Moskowitz.
Yeah.
So that's pretty funny. And there's also another moment where another Spielberg kind of moment where the fathership, well, it actually has a name that wasn't in the script, but the robots are called Fix-Its, and the two adults are called Kilowatt and Carmen.
Okay.
And so I don't know which one the father is. I guess Kilowatt. But he flies in, and you see Jessica Tandy like on the bed, and he flies like behind her, and there is a total Star Wars Death Star moment, and you can hear like kind of laser beams going off. That's total, you know, even Lucas Spielberg kind of thing. Like, wow, would not have picked that up as a kid, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And not to mention how much the robots are basically little R2-D2s.
I think you're stretching it now.
Oh, just this cute robot kind of thing. And I thought about WALL-E too. It's like, well, it's just kind of nature.
I thought more about WALL-E, like the, well, at least in terms of robot love, so to speak. I thought about WALL-E more. Anyways.
Right. But I mean, WALL-E came out afterwards. So, but that's a good, like, it's like you had R2-D2 is kind of the precedence, and WALL-E is kind of like the new R2-D2. But these guys are definitely like in that kind of category kind of thing. But that just seemed like, you know, the connection I made there. And again, with, I mentioned the Shaq being straight ET, you know, leading the people into the shed and all. So that's something I did not remember as a kid, like ever picking up on, but I see Spielberg's mark all over. In fact, even the director, who I was not familiar with, I didn't really recognize any of his other work other than the fact that he wrote Spielberg's first movie, Sugarland Express.
Oh, wow.
And has a cameo in both Close Encounters and THX 1138.
How about that?
Yeah, so it's like there's, again, another kind of Spielberg connection. So very, very subtle, but it's there.
Mm-hmm. So. Very cool. Thanks for sharing all that, Josh. I even rewatching it, I didn't make the connections until you drew them. So thank you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Though that one part where the I guess Kilowatt we're calling him, was flying in the sheets, very Death Star X-Wing style. It bothered me because for his altitude, he would not be able to push through the sheets without, I think, waking her, because the area was too small. But that's really nitpicky, really. I guess you could explain it away, but.
I would agree. That's a little too nitpicky.
I thought you were going to say, I would agree. He would push those sheets and wake her up. let's go ahead and move to our last topic. I guess it's really my last topic. You guys haven't mentioned it. But what do you guys think about the idea of this building is this broken down building that Mason, the artist character, is trying to get made into a historical monument so that they can save it. But he's not being very successful at that. So it's all broken down, and it's really filled with a bunch of people that have their own internal brokenness, like Faye and Frank. She has Alzheimer's, and he has this sort of inner rage, or seems to get really hot-tempered. And then you have Mason, who's a struggling artist, Marissa, who's, for all intents and purposes, an unwed pregnant woman. Well, she is unwed, but I mean, her boyfriend isn't really in the picture. And then Harry, who can't really talk and really can't connect emotionally. All these broken people in this broken building. It seems like when the Kilowatt and Carmen come, they fix the building, and for a bit, the characters seem better, but that doesn't seem to really last. What do you guys make of all that?
Well, they can't fix the outer shell. They can fix the outer shell, but not the inner shell.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we all struggle with.
Yeah,
they definitely didn't fix Carlos's life.
That is
the
true.
Villain there. And I didn't understand that. If, like, he didn't, the last you see of him, he gets no redemption.
Yeah,
after, after turning, he wanted to make amends and was turned away. That is worse than not giving a, not just ignoring your villain's comeuppance.
No, but I think it's more true to life, though.
It's very true to life, but it's sad for such a kid, you know, like family-oriented movie. It's like, I like that in, you know, a darker or a movie that wants to really take on these themes realistically. Mm-hmm. But when you have a clear case of a villain, or at least a, I like how they, you know, they explained his motivation and all, and that was, they did a very good job of that. But it's just, by the end, it's like, so let's give him a happy ending? No. He doesn't get a happy ending.
Denied.
He realized the error of his ways. Yeah, good for him. He should have done that in the first place.
Wow. Right.
Which that's is the movie's tone of his story arc.
It's helping kids grow up.
Paul, you love Hollywood endings.
So I know. This
is completely against. Well, I don't understand you right now.
I know. I generally don't like movies with sad endings, and I typically stay away from them. But it is what it is.
You know, though, I feel like it wasn't just Carlos at the end. I feel like all the characters it was wrapped up in almost a too nice of a little package. Like, they fix the building, like all the fix-its come from Fix-It Land world place, and fix the building, and after it's consumed in the fire, and then they're all happy and better, and it's like, oh, okay, the end, go to credits.
Well, isn't that what they were trying to, they got the place not demolished, they beat the demolishers and the people trying to take the place. And they were able to, they all got their home back. You know, the Frank and Faye didn't have to live in a home. And
that's they
got to be together.
What? Let me rephrase that. I think Frank and Faye, their ending was tied up well. But yeah, Marissa and Mason is still a little hazy. Yeah, they still got to live there. And you sort of assume that they're going to get together, and Harry, I guess, is going to be better, but that's not really talked about.
He just needs a new TV.
Well, yeah, that's like, they lost all their possessions. Like I thought there was going to be at least one line where Mason turns to, what's her name?
Marissa.
And says, I lost all my paintings. And then she says, yes, but you get to create a whole bunch of new, you know, you get to start, here's a chance to start new and fresh.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Well, that's this whole kind of thing. But there was no, it's like, nope, he lost it all and he's just going to keep being an artist.
That's because it helped kids grow up.
So I think what we're taking away from this is that your external circumstances may be fixed, but really it is up to you to better yourself, I guess.
Yeah.
I thought the message of the movie was, it's nice to have help and to help others.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. There was certainly a symbiotic relationship between them and the robots. So it seemed towards sort of the end of the second act, where the building's more or less fixed and everyone seems to be happy. It seems like they're just using the robots as slaves. Yeah. Go get me that paper. Go cook. I'm just going to lounge here. Smoke my cigar.
Well, what I got out of this movie was, just wait. You can wait until things get the absolute worst, but don't worry. In the end, little robots will make it all better.
And if you do something bad and you make amends, that's not going to fix everything.
I think these are really good morals. I'm glad that we're going to share. Well, yeah. I don't know. I guess it'll remain to be seen if we share these with our kids or not.
Well, it helps kids grow up.
But with that, let's go ahead and get to our Retro Rewind Roundtable Review, also known as, Paul?
The Moment of Truth.
The Moment of Truth. I guess let's go ahead and start with you, Josh. Would you rate Batteries Not Included asterisk Batteries Not Included as a classic or a second class, and why?
It's not a classic per se.
What would you define as a classic?
Me personally?
Yeah.
It's a classic. I would definitely recommend it to everyone. It's like, you haven't seen it, you should go see it. It's a classic. You know, it's like, it sets a standard of a type, you know?
Right.
This is more Saturday matinee kind of, you know, fun. You know, this is almost, it's a little better than made for TV kind of movie kind of thing, where it definitely is. It's a classic in a sense of family entertainment from the 80s, but a minor classic.
Okay. So second class.
So I'd say second class, but not to say that it's definitely not bad. It's long and, like I said, stretched kind of, it's a half hour story stretched into 100 minutes, but aside from that, I would still recommend it for, you know, you don't want to watch, you know, you're tired of whatever's around and you're just like, you know, a little bit nostalgic maybe, or, you know, just see something from a different era. So, yeah. Minor classic.
All right.
All right.
Well, we don't have minor classic as Rain, but so second class is your retro rewind rating?
That is my rating.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Josh. Paul, what say you, classic or second class?
I am going to have to say second class. I agree with my brother in the fact that it is slow. It's a slow movie. It's kind of hard to sit through a little bit for me, at least this time it was. I'd have to disagree with him that it's something that people should watch. Whenever they get around to it, I would just leave it be. As cute as the robots were and everything.
You know, if you love WALL-E and you want to watch a bunch of cute movies, or
I would
cute
not,
robot movies.
Yeah, I would not recommend this.
Really? I would recommend it. It's like, yeah, it's a cute movie, cute robot movie for family or kids or whatever.
Yeah, I think you could rewatch WALL-E.
Paul says rewatch WALL-E instead of watching Batteries Not Included.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul. But for me, wow, this is one of those movies where I wish I could take some elements and put them into a better movie, essentially. Like, I wish I could take the effects of the robots and put them in a different movie that I could consider a classic. I don't know what that movie would be.
Land Before Time.
Yes.
I would put some of these effects in some current movies.
Or that, yeah, even that. But I would have to agree with both of you guys and say Barry's Not Included is a second-class movie. I feel like there are some parts that are enjoyable to watch, but on the whole, I feel like the movie is not that enjoyable, just mainly because of the way it wraps up at the end. For all the things we already talked about, I'm not going to rehash it. But yeah. And the characters, for whatever reason, Faye, Jessica Tandy's character, annoys me throughout the movie. And since she's one of the lead characters, that's not something that makes the movie that much less enjoyable.
Yeah.
I wish I could have connected with the robots better, had more of their backstory. I think I could have connected with them better if that had happened. Just different elements like that. Again, essentially taking some elements, putting them in a different movie. I don't know what that movie is, but because of that, I probably went show this to Sophia as like, oh, you got to watch this.
Right.
Would you ever show her?
Not of my own volition. If she is like, oh, what's this Barry's Not Included movie? I'd be like, well, we can watch it if you want. It's not that great. So I'd let her watch it, but it wouldn't be a movie that I would recommend to her. For instance, like some of the other movies we've done, Fly of the Navigator, I would recommend to her, or Anne of Green Gables, definitely. Certainly. Oh, sorry. So does that answer your question, Josh?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. With that...
And I'm glad that you want to show her Flight of the Navigator, because that's such a good movie.
Yeah.
Did you listen to our episode on Flight of the Navigator?
I'm sorry I missed that one.
Oh my gosh.
Spoiler alert. for all those people who haven't heard it,
yeah,
what Francisco's vote on it is.
Oh, right. Well, it's a past episode. It's not like I'm giving...
Well,
yeah, I guess.
Not everybody watches it in order.
Good point.
Or listens to it.
That's, you know what? That is a completely valid point. Anyway, with that, the Retro Rewind podcast rates Batteries Not Included as a second class, a unanimous second class movie.
Sometimes we talk about poop. Anyway.
So if you probably want to watch something else, if you're have a hankering for an 80s movie, maybe go watch Star Wars again or Short Circuit maybe. We've never done Short Circuit, but that might be a movie to try instead of this one.
Star Wars is 77, by the way.
No, he meant Empire or...
Empire or Jedi?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeez, sorry.
Hey, there's a lot of Star Wars fans out there. That's you know?
You know what? Good point. Thanks for covering my
bases.
He didn't
mean the Christmas special.
All right, Alice, will you bring up the communication satellites, please?
ComSat online. Receiving incoming transmission.
All right, so before we get into our feedback, let me go ahead and ask you guys if you have anything to promote this week. Paul, do you have anything you'd like our great listeners to know about?
They can contact me on pauljpowers.com and see if I'm promoting anything there on any of the social medias. That you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, whatever. It's all there at pauljpowers.com.
Awesome. How about yourself, Josh?
I am a contributing writer for quiptracks.com. Anyone familiar with Riff Tracks, Mystery Science Theater, where it's a hilarious commentary set to movies?
Quip?
And,
Q-U-I-P-P?
Q-U-I-P-T-R-C-K-S.
T-R-A-C-K-S?
Yeah, Tracks.
Okay, not an X at the end. Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, so they have they're riffing Paycheck, the Ben Affleck movie. And yeah, so that's out. And if you want to catch me at on Twitter at Joshua Powers, and that's just my own personal notepad of funny or interesting. It's not as funny as much as it's interesting kind of ideas I have. So that's it.
Awesome. Spielbergian ideas?
Any Spielberg? You know, this movie made me want to tweet some Spielbergian things.
Nice.
Be like, man, this has got Spielberg's name all over it. But I didn't because it's not. it wasn't terribly funny. So has to be a good combination of both. And you can find my actual work, my riffing on quiptracks.com for my work with Treacher Riffs.
Oh, cool.
Where you can find riffs of the movie Congo or Lost in Space, or maybe some short films you'd like to watch because they're pretty funny.
Is that on QuipTracks now, not iRiffs?
QuipTracks.com or iRiffs.com.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I actually listened to a sample of one of the ones you did. I wish I could remember what movie it was for. But yeah, it sounded funny. I enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And do you have anything... Do you have anything to promote, Francisco?
I just have pretty much just this podcast and the Facebook page. We're still trying to get to 30 likes, I should say. So would appreciate any listeners going to facebook.com/retrorewindpodcast and liking our page. That way we can, once we hit 30, we get something. It's some level of... Facebook page level 2, I don't know. But that's all I have to promote this time around. Let's move on to some feedback we've gotten on the actual RetroRewindPodcast.com site. And again, if you want to go and comment on this episode, you can do that by going to RetroRewindPodcast.com/RRP9. And you may already be there if you're listening to this episode from the website. So we've gotten a comment from When Robots Produce. Huh, that's funny. That's almost like very reminiscent of this episode.
Yes.
But she talked about our Return to Oz episode, how it was one of her favorites as a kid, and she enjoyed watching it again as an adult. So if you want to read all her full comment, go to the Return to Oz episode, which is RRP8. Also, we got feedback. We got two comments on our Rocketeer episode, all the way back to number two, which is RRP2. Mike Wiener. I'm so sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, Mike. But he actually let me know that there was a misspelling on the website. Apparently, I don't know how to spell subscribe. So he alerted me to that, and I fixed it. Thank you. I really appreciate that, Mike. And he just let us know that he found us from the Upper Memory Block podcast, which, again, I recommend. Go see. That is an awesome podcast, its own self. We also got from Justin M. Salvado, we got a comment about, he was, I'm going to just say, is fairly critical of the podcast. But he's still going to check it out and see if we improve, which hopefully, if you're still listening now, Justin, from all the way from episode number two, you have found that we have improved.
Hopefully.
Or if you're gone, well, then I guess you're gone. So see you later.
No, the hopefully we improved.
Oh, we have. We've gotten so much better. Oh, yeah.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Sad. All righty. Paul, how can people contact you if they would like to reach out to you? Just your website?
Yeah.
All right.
I think we did the contact. So, Francisco, how can people contact you?
They can contact me on Twitter at Francisco X Ruiz.
All right.
All right. With a Z, yes, at the end. And you can also get in contact with me through the show's email, which is feedback@retrorewindpodcast.com. And also, again, on the Facebook page. Josh, how about yourself? I don't think you mentioned how people can contact you.
At Joshua Powers on Twitter.
Okay.
Probably perfect. Be the best way.
Yeah. Awesome. Great. So thank you, Josh, so much for coming on the show again.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And Paul, as always, thank you for being the rock... darn it.
The Rocketeer?
No, I was going to say the Rock'em Sock'em Robots of co-hosts, but that makes no
well,
sense.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you bet. And listeners, I want to say a very special thank you to you for listening to another long episode, but it was a fun one. I hope you had fun listening. And if you want to show your support for the Retro Rewind podcast, you can do that in two ways. The first way is just telling a friend about the show. And the second way is by leaving us a review and star rating on iTunes. You can just do a search in iTunes. I will have an actual link that you don't have to just search in iTunes and hope you find the Retro Rewind podcast. But if you'd leave us a rating and review there, that'd help us get noticed by more people. And yeah, just have more people to share these old movies with. And that is all. Thank you so much again. And where are we ending now with, Paul? Catch you later.
Until next time.
Until next time. Until next time, we'll see you later.
Not see you later. Until next time. That's it. And until next time, like, have a good one or something like that. You know, but not seeing any, well, you know what I mean?
Retro Rewind mission complete. Proceed to Nath Point Omega and return to base.
I feel like I just got the door shut on me or something.